morning, Cascadia. Today is Monday, March 22nd, 2010, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. And this is Air Cascadia. I'm on content, short on time. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Liam Delta.
Congress approved the health care bill, warts and all.
Half a million people massed in Washington, D.C. yesterday demanding that President Obama make good on his immigration promises.
And Cindy Sheehan was arrested outside the White House for voicing her opposition to 7 years of endless war.
Portland area weather today, a chance of showers, high around 56. Tonight, a slight chance of showers and lows around 41. Then tomorrow and Wednesday, mostly sunny with highs in the 60s. And the rain comes back Wednesday night.
And first, we go to regional news from around Cascadia, though we have huge national events as well further on into the show. Last August, Oregon Orchard has got a destructive surprise, a tiny spotted winged Drosophila suzukii fruit fly. It's probably here to stay. Ever since the state's leading entomologists have been engaged in a frantic crash course to find the thing, understand it, and control it. The creature is the most serious insect threat to high-value fruit and berry crops yet, and this is yet another component of the price we pay for globalization and unchecked climate destabilization.
This last weekend, the American Center for Sustainability and volunteers planted some 40,000 seeds. Here's to spring, here's to growing interest in local foods, and here's to planting your own garden. After everything sprouts at a greenhouse in southeast Portland, they'll be transplanted and distributed to more than 50 Oregon nonprofits.
The contest is on between people who want to turn sawdust into energy or biomass and people who want to use it to make particle board, all in the name of green industry, of course. Over the coming years, billions of dollars in federal subsidies aim to turn the so-called leftovers of forest, including those in Oregon, into sources of renewable power. Alas, it's all a lie. Several lies, actually. First, nothing in a forest is ever left over, and burning it is no more sustainable than setting fire to the last of our trees and feeling warm all over about it. None of which takes into account the ferocious particulate pollution created by burning wood products in the first place.
Last night, in a Pyrrhic victory, Congress approved President Obama's health bill. In a way, it was like having foundered in an irreconcilable quagmire. One side declares victory and withdraws. The Democratic-controlled Congress approved historic legislation extending health care to tens of millions of uninsured Americans and cracking down on insurance company abuses. It also guarantees the sanctity of life for unborn people while leaving open significant loopholes to the afterlife for many of the living. The century-long quest for universal coverage ended not with a bang, but with a whimper.
Before we go on to our first interview, I just want to add this to the previous story. The past Saturday, on the eve of Congress's approval of the health care bill, the Tea Party has proved to the nation once again health care or even socialism. The issue is racism and bigotry, and it always has been. Civil rights hero Representative John Lewis and fellow Congressional Black Caucus member Andre Carson were leaving a Democratic caucus meeting with President Obama when Tea Party members crowded around them yelling, "Kill the bill and then kill," and they used the N-word. It was not an isolated incident. The party has also distinguished themselves by screaming, "Barney, you faggot," at Representative Barney Frank. There you have it. Well, now we move on to our first interview. We're going to be speaking with Rebecca Jeske, the Media Relations Director at the Electronic Frontier Foundation, last Thursday. There was a hearing on the Freedom of Information Act and its current status. At the hearing, David Sobel, Senior Counsel with the Electronic Frontier Foundation, acknowledged the Obama administration's avowed commitment to greater transparency. But there's a rising chorus of voices demanding that that President Obama back his words up with some action. My guest this morning is Rebecca Jeske. Good morning, Rebecca.
Good morning, Chris.
Thanks so much for being with us. I read David Sobel's, his testimony, and I want to ask you, what in your estimation has been progress? Have we really seen any significant changes?
One of the big changes that we've seen, actually, is simply the administration acknowledging that the Freedom of Information Act is important and that it's something that the government should follow and that Americans deserve this information. You're right in that there's been a disconnect between the strong message from the White House and the bureaucratic resistance from the agencies. But at least we are getting the strong message.
As filing Freedom of Information Act requests for documents and so forth, have there been more requests? Have you seen more requests in the pipeline during this the first year of this administration compared with the Bush or Clinton administrations?
You know, I don't have the numbers in front of me on the filings, the initial requests for Freedom of Information Act information. What I do know is that we haven't seen much change in the documents that are released. There were a number of cases that were delayed during the Bush administration, and we offered at the change of administrations to let these agencies reassess the information, to let the new administration decide if there was more information that was ready to be released. And unfortunately, that was something that was turned down, and by the agencies in the Obama administration. And so the one thing that we aren't seeing is a change in the amount of information that's getting released.
This the hearing itself was concerned with current trends. What would you say would be the most significant trend?
Well, the most significant trend, actually, that one of the things that we're concerned about here is that we haven't seen any substantial change in the Department of Justice defending these agencies. There's always going to be, bureaucratic entrenchment in various agencies, whether that's at the FBI or Department of Homeland Security. But the Department of Justice doesn't have to defend each of their requests to withhold information. So we're seeing that trend continue, that the DOJ reflexively defend any claim by agencies that this information needs to be secret or needs to be redacted. One of the things we'd really like to see is the Department of Justice and Attorney General Holder disclose how many agencies ask for these kinds of redactions and information held back, and how many it's going to decline to defend.
Thanks so much for that. My guest has been Rebecca Jeskin, Media Relations Director with the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Again, thank you, Rebecca.
Thank you.
Across the nation, and in this case we include Cascadia, protesters took to the streets to protest the ongoing wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Portland saw its share of nonviolent action. In D.C., activist Cindy Sheehan and five other anti-war protesters spent the rest of the weekend in jail after being arrested outside the White House. A total of eight people were arrested after laying coffins at a White House fence after Saturday's march.
Geopolitics aside, war destroys lives by ravaging the land people depend upon for sustenance. This is especially true in traditional cultures such as those in Iraq and Afghanistan. We wage war remotely from computers far removed from the scenes of these crimes. Soldiers never see fields of grain reduced to rubble. My guest today is botanist and naturalist recently returned from Afghanistan, Dana Vasali. Good morning, Dana. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And you'll be speaking in Portland this evening at 7 p.m. at the Multnomah Friends Meeting House, right?
That's correct.
And we'll have more information about that available at the front desk and on the Air Cascadia site. We'll be announcing it throughout the day. Can you talk a little bit about the economic context of war? What are the ramifications?
Well, the economic context of war, we could say for openers that war is expensive, and it's expensive in ways that sometimes we don't remember to calculate. As you were saying just before you put me on, war is not only between people and against human beings, but it does do tremendous damage to the earth. And from all that I've seen and all that I read in Afghanistan, you couldn't find a better example of the damage that war does, because the landscape is pretty devastated in that country.
It's been ravaged repeatedly over the years, but this recent bout of conflict seems to be taking a terrible toll. Now, what is the effect? You were there. How has this affected farmers, vegetation, what grows, what people are able to grow, what people are able to glean from the landscape? What are people doing? There's no food.
Yeah, I can't speak to that question as an expert. I should say that I was there for 14 days this month. I landed in the morning on March 1st. I went on a visit with the group in San Francisco called Global Exchange. There were 12 of us. And we spent almost all of our time in Kabul because the situation is so insecure in the country that it's not considered safe to travel in any extensive way outside the capital. We did get out on a couple of occasions. And so anything that I know about the agricultural situation is really what we may have had a few conversations with people while we were there. And from what I've read, and it really goes back to the fact that war destroys economies. I mean, we mentioned people previously. We mentioned the natural environment. But it also disintegrates human economies. And in Afghanistan, there's been 30 years of war, and it has been a war against the productive capacity of the country, including the Soviet occupation, things I have read and been told about what the Soviets did to agricultural areas, cutting down all the pistachio forests so that there would be no viable income for the Mujahideen, and that has continued to by degrees to the present day. And actually, I would say the United States does not go after pistachio forests in the way that that particular war did, but war is always destructive to really all players.
We've seen the effects of depleted uranium in many parts of the world, and we certainly see it most evidently in people returning from war zones where they've been exposed to depleted uranium. And in fact, not always war zones, are very often test sites that the military has been using and dump sites. What are the effects of depleted uranium on crops, on the landscape? Or, for that matter,
honestly,
any other poison that is employed in the normal course of waging war?
Well, I think it is appropriate to broaden that question. I have not personally seen the information of depleted uranium use in Afghanistan by the United States. I have seen the numbers for Iraq, and in fact, I've been to Iraq 4 times in the last 8 years, and I've seen children with very strange diseases lined up in the hospitals dying because there was a lack of medicine to treat them in any way. So I've seen those numbers for Iraq. You know, I have not seen information on the impact on agricultural crops, but the larger question of the toxic materials used in war, it's easy to generalize about that insofar as modern weaponry is extremely toxic and is going to diminish the life-sustaining capacity of the planet. And we don't tend to think about that. We tend to think about war in black and white terms, and we don't realize that we're diminishing the capacity of the Earth to sustain life, including our own children. So it's a pretty unwise way to conduct foreign policy.
We're so remote from it that we escape all moral culpability and lack of vision to even stop ourselves, it seems. My guest has been Dana Fasali, botanist and naturalist. Dana will be speaking tonight, 7 p.m., 4312 Southeast Star. Thank you very much, Dana.
Yeah, thanks so much to you.
And finally, 500,000 demonstrators flooded Washington, D.C. yesterday, including a group from Oregon, frustrated with the pace of action on overhauling the country's immigration system. This has been Air Cascadia for Monday, March 22nd, 2010. Engineering is Tammy Dean. Kathleen Stevenson is the KDU AM News and Public Affairs Director. Chris Andre is the producer. I'm Ian Delta.
You've been hearing news and comment from Air Cascadia on KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 FM in Portland, KBOO.FM on the web. Your support, and your support only, as always, keeps us subverting the dominant paradigm. Thanks so much, members.
Now stay tuned for Locust Focus, Barbara Bernstein talks to PSU geologist Scott Burns about earthquakes.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for your support, and have a good day.